Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee, Tuesday 28th of November. Just a reminder that this meeting is recorded in accordance with Council policies. Apologies from
Councillor Montgomery, Munro, Johnston and McCall.
Thank you. And order of business is as it appears on your papers. Any declarations of interest can be made now or at a later point. Previous minutes is the first item for approval. Does anybody have any matters to raise during the minutes? Happy to accept those minutes. Good. Moving on to the first public reports, item 5.1, inspection of Bilston Primary. Grace, thanks.
Thank you. The purpose of this report outlines the outcome of the inspection of Bilston Primary School as carried out by the Care Inspectorate, which was communicated in the report of August 2017, which is attached as Appendix 1. Section 2.2 outlines the evaluations for Bilston, which were quality of care and support was excellent, quality of environment excellent, quality of staffing very good, and quality of management and leadership very good. Section 2.3 outlines the key strengths, which include some lovely statements about the nursery itself. Section 2.4 outlines that there were no requirements or recommendations with this inspection, and Section 4 concludes with the recommendations.
Thanks, Grace. Any questions or comments? No. Item 5.2 is inspection of Cowan Court Extra Care Housing.
Thank you, Chair. So the report provides information in relation to the recent inspection of Cowan Court. Section 2.3 highlights the grades that were awarded at that point. So it was a 5, which is very good for care and support, a 5, very good for management and leadership, and a 4 for staffing. Section 2.4 highlights the strengths that were there. There were two recommendations that were made as a result of the inspection. One was around some of the infection control training, and other in terms of the relation to the recording of the information by the care staff on the ground. Both of those recommendations have been addressed within the facility, and committee is being asked to acknowledge the continued improvement since the previous inspection and the positive and ongoing work by management and staff connected with Cowan Court. A copy of the report is provided within the appendix.
Thank you. Committee happy to note the recommendations. Good. Item 5.3 is inspection of St Mary's Primary School Nursery Class. Grace, thank you.
Thank you. Further to the Cabinet report, which was dated back on the 28th of February 2017, outlining the outcome of the then HMI inspection, the purpose of this report is to update you on the most recent Care Inspectorate inspection of St Mary's Nursery Class, which was completed on the 27th of September 2017. Section 2 of the report outlines the background, and 2.2 in particular outlines the progress made from good to very good in three indicators and from adequate to very good in the quality of management and leadership. The section also lists some of the qualitative evaluations, which include comments about the clear vision and how the service works hard to meet children's needs. Section 4 concludes with the recommendations.
Thanks, Grace. Happy to move on. Item 5.4, inspection of Midlothian Residential Service for Young People. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The inspection of the residential services within Midlothian was carried out in September 2017. Section 2.3 highlights the grades of good for both quality of care and quality of staffing. Section 2.4 highlights the strengths within the services. And in Section 3, we had one requirement, which was to reinstate the logbook, which was done with immediate effect, and we have two recommendations, which are an ongoing piece of work, which are within our developmental care plan in relation to moving things forward. Section 5 highlights the recommendations to the...
Thanks. Any comments for John? Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it was just to note that John had a meeting with myself, Councillor Muirhead and Councillor Janet Lee Douglas to go over the unique challenges that were met during that time, and we were satisfied the reasons for that rating, and that it's not reflective of the current quality.
Good, thanks. Just to pick up on that, though, I mean, on paper and black and white, what's in this committee, it's not the best reading. Is there, you know, are we making it sure that, are we getting it right for our most vulnerable young people?
It's good gradings. It's dropped from very good down to good, but I think, as I've highlighted to many years before, this has been a really, really challenging summer. I am confident that we're still offering the best care possible to Midlothian children, and I suppose one of the key points that we want to make is that we're maintaining children within Midlothian, because we have the research, the knowledge and the experience to know that, you know, sending them out with does not improve outcomes. So that is a very, very challenging dichotomy that we sit with within Midlothian services, but I'm comfortable that we are doing the best we can. And we challenge the care inspectorate in relation to offering alternatives, which to date they've not been able to offer any alternative solutions to the dilemmas that we face.
Good, that's helpful. I guess that's what you get for setting the bar so high when you get good inspections and then you have a slight dip. Thanks, Joan. Happy to move on to item 5.5, the second statutory biodiversity report. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Chair. As this is a report on a statutory requirement for reporting on progress and performance, it's reported to this committee for its information and interest. It is the required 3-yearly report of the actions taken by the Council in carrying out its statutory duty to further the conservation of biodiversity. And it's the second such report required, the first being in 2014, under the terms of the Wildlife and Natural Environment Scotland Act 2011. As the report itself is attached to your papers, I won't go into detail, but if there are any questions arising, then either myself or Grant Ballantyne, who's the lead officer here, who's responsible for the report, are happy to answer any questions, Chair.
Thanks, Ian. It's at moments like this where I always miss Ian Baxter for his excellent scrutiny of papers like this, so I'll give him a nod. Any other questions or comments on this paper? No? Okay. Happy to move on to the first performance report, which is Adult Social Care, quarter two. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I won't take you through all of the report, but will highlight some of the key areas for you. So in terms of integration, the first annual report was published in August 2017, and hopefully people have had an opportunity to look at some of those. One of the big areas of work that we have been undertaking over the previous quarter has been around our workforce strategy. We're really key in terms of how we deliver care, and when I come on to talking about some of the challenges that we're experiencing further on, workforce, particularly in care at home, is one of the significant areas for us. So developing our workforce framework has been really critical in terms of looking not just at council workforce, not just at the NHS workforce, but looking at the third sector and who we're commissioning from as well in terms of that entirety of how we're doing that. Being able to highlight where our challenges are, being able to highlight where we think we need to focus some of the work around that. So the workforce framework has been a really critical piece of work for us within that. A good area of work that we'd want to highlight is around the wellbeing service. This is a service that's currently in 8 of our GP practices, and we're doing the analysis of that and hope to be able to come forward with more information for people. And that was around the fact that for a lot of individuals who were going to their GPs, particularly those who go for very regular appointments, that actually some of the factors that were causing them to go to their GP practice were probably not entirely health related, but the impact of other lifestyle things such as housing, benefits, a whole range of different factors were having an impact on their physical health, but they were things that the GP potentially felt that they were unable to deal with in that 10 to 15 minute appointment. So the wellbeing service is really out there to be working with people in a very different kind of way, and certainly the first appointment that people are offered is an hour long appointment, and that really gives people to explore all of the challenges that they're experiencing. And anecdotally, I think what we're finding from GPs is in some cases it's significantly reduced the amount of GP appointments that people are needing to make, and for people where they still obviously have very significant health issues, it means that the GP is actually able to focus on those health issues specifically with the individual, because the other areas that are causing that person concern are being dealt with in a different way. So for us, the wellbeing project has been a real success for us in terms of how we're developing some of that integration. I think we'd set it up originally assuming that it would focus with people with long-term health conditions, but actually depression, anxiety have been some of the primary reasons that people have been referred into it, so it's actually been much wider than we'd originally expected. Within older people's services, there are some real positives in terms of what we're delivering, but I suppose, unfortunately, I'm going to focus on a couple of the negatives that we're having. We're still experiencing significant difficulties in terms of our care at home service, and even into this stage in quarter three, we're still experiencing those challenges. We've had movements of providers, we've had a provider that's handed a contract back to us, and we're struggling to meet the level of demand that's out there at this point in time, which when you're looking at the performance factors, you'll notice that we are continuing to struggle to meet in terms of delayed discharges, and that's predominantly down to the blockages within the system in our care at home packages at this point in time, which is really significant for us. But there's been some real positive work in terms of dementia and some of the ageing well projects that are real positives around older people's services. Within learning disabilities, the big area of work that we're developing at this point in time is particularly around day services, and we're doing some significant consultation work at this point in time with people who use day services and their carers, but also people who deliver that for us in the widest context, for us to look at how we reshape and redesign, particularly to meet the upcoming demands that we're facing and experiencing in terms of transitions. We have a lot of young people that are coming through into adult services with quite complex needs, and actually what they're looking for and hoping for in terms of meaningful day activities is different to some of the day services that we currently have in place. So we're taking this as a real opportunity to reshape what we're doing and what we're delivering to meet those needs, and to do that within the financial challenges and pressures that we're experiencing at this point in time. Within physical disability, sensory loss, one of the big areas has been around the audiology clinic and some of the awareness raising that we've been doing around a range of areas, and I think most recently it's been with the fire service in terms of some of the work that we've been doing. So there's lots of work that's going on to develop some of that area. Substance misuse, obviously through council, we had been successful in getting awarded capital grant for us to upgrade Dalkeith Social Work Centre to develop the recovery hub, and actually the significant work that is now ongoing for us to be working out how we best make use of that space in out-of-hours opportunities, what we're doing with third sector, voluntary sector, to really address some of the challenges. And the challenges still remain within substance misuse at this point in time in the 23% cuts that we had received. And although there is potential for new funding within substance misuse, we've not had that clarified as yet as to what that means for us locally. Criminal justice, we've been able to appoint an additional social worker to in criminal justice social work, and this provides the team capacity which will allow us to work with domestic abuse perpetrators on a voluntary basis, and that will link very much into some Safe and Together training that we're jointly doing with Children's Services to really look at how we work with families where domestic abuse is a real significant factor. At the moment, our criminal justice team will only work where there's court-mandated work, and we don't have the capacity to do that on a voluntary basis. But the type of work that we do on a court-mandated basis we think would have much wider impact if we were able to address that. And violence against women is obviously a really significant issue for us within Midlothian. Within mental health, the mental health access points that we've had as a pilot project within Midlothian has far exceeded our expectations in terms of the reach and the demand around that service, and we're getting really positive feedback around that. Within Midlothian, we'd had some issues around accessing psychological therapies, and there were significant waiting times for us, and what we wanted to be able to develop was an opportunity for people to go when they needed to get the advice and support that they felt was most useful for them. So there's been a really significant number of people that have been accessing that, and we've been able to signpost and ensure that people are getting the appropriate support. And psychological therapies isn't necessarily that most appropriate support for someone at the first point. And they're working very closely with the wellbeing service that I've already mentioned. We've also done a significant piece of work around a triage project with the police. You'll be aware that the police will spend a lot of time with people who are potentially experiencing a mental health crisis, and this is allowing them to get very quick and swift access from a community psychiatric nurse to be able to get advice about, is that person known to mental health services? What should we be doing? What's the best way for us to support this person? Which means that the police intervention could potentially be shorter and be more appropriate for the individual that we're supporting. So that's now up and running, and we're seeing real benefits around that locally. Happy to take.
Thank you. Yes, Margot.
Thank you for that report. Just a couple of questions. You mentioned the challenges regarding care at home, and I think most of us around the table here will know of individuals that are struggling to get their families home. As I say, you mentioned challenges, but you haven't really declared any way of how we're going to actually physically deal with it in the coming year or so. Winter coming in, it's obviously probably a lot more difficult because older people end up in hospital a lot more. So there'll be a potential for more people actually having to get care at home. And I know about Aspire obviously changing and the upsetting that will be for some of the casework that was happening with individuals. And I just wondered what measures have been put in place to guide people and sit and talk to them and you know, try to reassure them that you're still going to get the same level of care. The other question, what else, with regards to the substance abuse and obviously the use of the recovery system, I wondered if part of that, trying to find out, you know, what's going to go in the building and who's all going to go into the building, has there been a survey undertaken by the user groups that what type of thing would they want? I know you mentioned out of hours there, and I think that would be obviously very useful because these things don't just work to a pattern when people are upset, and obviously we're going into difficult times. So I just wondered if you'd actually surveyed the people that would be physically needing to use it. Sorry for the long question.
I'm going to start with the substance misuse one because I think that's the slightly easier of the two to kick off with. So from substance misuse, there's a couple of different means that we're working on. So MELDAP and our planning officer for mental health are planning a range of sessions with both voluntary sector providers and users and carers over the coming month to 6 weeks to ensure that we're able to engage really clearly, because it's also around us getting a sense of, if you had the opportunity of using one of the rooms in the building, what would you do as a group? What do people want to see in that building? Because there might be things that we're thinking as professionals might be really helpful, but actually when we get out to the users and carers. So over the next 6 week period, there's, I know we've got Christmas in the middle of that, but there are some plans afoot for us to be engaging quite meaningfully. We're not doing it as a survey. I think we're going to have it as a bit of a conversation, because I think it gives us an opportunity to talk about the plans and for people to kind of bounce ideas off each other as well, because it might be that you don't necessarily know what you want to do, but when you're sitting in a group with other people, you suddenly start thinking about how things would fit together in a really positive way. So there are some plans around that, as I say, because there's mental health, criminal justice and substance misuse in the building, we're needing to make sure that whatever we use that space for is appropriate for everybody and we don't just focus on one of those groups. But there are plans over the next period of time. Care at home, which is the more challenging of those questions that you'd asked me. So the provider... The change happened from Aspire having handed back their contract to the other providers. So care staff have moved across, and our priority over the last couple of weeks has been to ensure that that transition happens as smoothly as it can. That's not disputing the fact that there will be some people who've still found that transition a difficult process. Where possible, we've tried to ensure that care staff who have been delivering with Aspire are continuing to deliver for people, but that hasn't been possible in every single set of circumstances, because of two-pay arrangements, it might be that some people haven't quite fitted into that in the same way with just one provider delivering as when there's more than one provider. But where possible, we have tried to do that, and every individual should have been informed and clearly being able to identify if they've got any issues or problems around some of that. What we hope with the shift of the staff into new providers and us looking at how the run's done, we've taken the opportunity to review some of the packages of care to check that they're still appropriate for everybody and that we've got the right need. By doing some of that shift, we hope that that will free up some capacity within the existing workforce, which should allow us to get a little bit of flow into that system. There is a fairly significant piece of work that is going on to reshape and redesign our care at home services anyway. We're really clear that it is not a fit for, it doesn't fit and work in the way that we would like it to. And when I go back to talking about the workforce strategy, actually part of the challenge is about attracting people into care and keeping people in care as well. So we're really needing to look and explore what those are, and there's not a quick fix answer. What I would say historically is that you mentioned winter. Midlothian hasn't experienced the same challenges at winter. Historically, summer has always been our challenging period for care at home. This summer has been exceptionally challenging for us, but summer has always been the harder period for us. And that's often because family members are away on holiday, our own care staff want to take their holidays, and there's periods that we see differences in how we get hospital discharge over the summer period as well, with staff in hospitals and things like that having holidays at key periods. So summer has always been, when we look back over the last few years, summer has always been when we've seen our spikes, and winter we have generally managed to maintain really good discharges, although I would acknowledge that going into this winter we're in our worst position than I've ever known us to be in terms of delayed discharges, and depending on where we get to in terms of some of the health issues, that's going to be challenging. But it is one of our key priorities within health and social care, and the IJB certainly is. There'd been a programme and planned period over a five-year shift and change, and the IJB had been really clear that that window was too long and that they were wanting to bring that forward in terms of the programme of change and the delivery. In the older people, in some of the integration agenda, we'd mentioned that there's a new project that's happening in Pennycook, particularly around some of the housebound, and it's been ways of looking at how we pull everybody together who's working with individuals. So there is an integration project and team that's set up in Pennycook as a trial project that's bringing together GPs, district nurses, our care staff, the voluntary sector, to see if actually by pooling those resources in a different way, there's different ways of supporting. So rather than you as an older person who's in your house having in the same day a GP, a district nurse, a care worker, an OT coming into your house, is there a different way of us looking at doing that to better pool our resources and make that go a little bit further?
Thanks. Councillor Smeal.
Alison, thank you very much for that report. One of the interesting things you said is that some of your care packages are actually resulting in less burden on NHS GPs. It's quite surprising to me as a new councillor, the number of inquiries, if not complaints, we receive relating to the problem of GP capacity in Midlothian. If we were able to create a justified statement as to the beneficial impact of Midlothian as a social work provider on the GP's hours, I think that would be a very positive thing for us to be able to say to the ward members. But perhaps it's very difficult to measure, to say, for example, the number of hours of GP time that we have managed to save as a result of our interventions.
I think there would be some work that we could do, and I think there's a number of different strands that we've looked at. So we're very fortunate within Midlothian that we're working very closely with the Health and Social Care Partnership and our GP practices in the clusters, and there's a number of different strands. So the wellbeing service that I'd spoken about is one aspect of what we're doing. We're also looking at how we've been having pharmacy input into our GP practices, and we're also in the process of recruiting to some physio posts that will support our GP practices. And that has been supported by primary care monies that have come into us from the government, and we've been looking at the best ways of doing that, because not necessarily just recruiting an extra GP when you're looking at someone's health in that holistic sense. Actually, it's making sure that you see a GP when you really need to see a GP. And certainly we've done leaflets within Midlothian that I'm sure you've seen that are about when you need to see a GP and suggestions of when it might be more appropriate for you to go to your pharmacy or for you to go to a nurse or wherever that might be, or the opticians or the dentist, in terms of what's the most appropriate resource for you to be going to. So we've taken a number of different strands to try and improve and ensure that we have a better position with our GP practices within Midlothian. But certainly we could look at coming forward with a more detailed information for you at some point if that would be helpful.
Thank you. If it's useful to know, I know that there's at this precise moment remember what local authority it is, but we're currently doing a trial around putting welfare officers into GP surgeries, and I think they had looked at some like the detailed information that you're asking around how much resources does that save, but I'll look it out and I'll pass it on to you if it's helpful, particularly when we've got the welfare review coming to council soon. It might be helpful background reading to that. Happy to move on. Customer and Housing Services Quarter 2 Report 5.7. Oh, that's you as well. Sorry, I'm looking for Kevin and he's not here.
Skip. What I would say is I probably can't answer the questions around Kevin's area in the level of detail that I am in my own area, but I will do my best, or will certainly take a way to get that information from you, for you certainly. Wanting to highlight is the New Buyers Crescent, the Gore Avenue. So obviously in 2014, Midlothian Council had demolished a number of houses there. Part of the agreement when we were doing some of the resettlement was that individual tenants who did want to move back to the Gorebridge area would be facilitated as part of that. And it was just wanting to confirm that all eligible households had been rehoused where that was required. In terms of homelessness, it would be wanting to highlight Pentland House opened during the summer, and the reuse of that building is as an alternative to the bed and breakfast accommodation, which will significantly reduce the need for us to use bed and breakfast and will make a much more positive model for how we support people to move through that whole process and into longer term accommodation. The support staff that's provided there by the Salvation Army will enable us to do that support in a way that we're unable to do in the bed and breakfast type accommodation. So not only is it more cost effective model for us, but will also allow was to support people in a more meaningful way to move on appropriately. The Eastern Midlothian Resolution Service, over this period we have got into a shared service with East Lothian. The Resolution Service has been working in Midlothian for a period of time, has been deemed to be really successful, and we've been able to broaden that out and are now also providing that service for East Lothian. And it's really been able to ensure, particularly around neighbour disputes and ensuring that those are resolved in a positive way, has been really positive, where we've had issues with young people being thrown out of the family home and some of the positions around that. And the Resolution Service has been really positive around that kind of area. Within homelessness, there's been some changes around the length of time that we would be looking for families and pregnant women to be living in accommodation, and that has significantly reduced in the new legislation. It is something that we are really good at managing within Midlothian, but it doesn't mean to say that those challenges, and we don't need to look at new ways of ensuring that we can continue to maintain that. And it isn't appropriate for us to be using bed and breakfast accommodation for that group, so it is making sure that we're doing that in the appropriate way that we can. Within housing services, it's wanting to highlight that there's been a total of 1,020 new council homes have been built since they embarked on the new build programme in 2006. And there's a really significant plan for new build as we move forward as well. Registered social landlords in Scottish Government now stands at 2,488 since 2006 as well. So there's been a real mix of housing and across that in the market within a Midlothian perspective. City Deal will offer some new opportunities for us within that as we're moving forward as well. Within revenues, Universal Credit Service was rolled out in March 2017. I would highlight that there is a full and detailed report on Universal Credit that is coming to the next council meeting that will be highlighting some of the pressures and challenges that we're experiencing within a Midlothian context, and that will be laid out in detail at the next council meeting.
Thanks, Alison. Any questions or comments? I don't want to ask you anything too detailed, because now you said I'm going to put you on the spot. I just wanted to note something very briefly about the Welfare Reform Subcommittee that hasn't met very recently. And I just note the constant conversations that we keep having around universal credit. So it would be good if we could reconvene that. And
As I said, there is a paper that's coming to council on universal credit. I think welfare reform is also one of the papers that is due to come to council at the next meeting.
It's probably very likely to have the detailed meeting dates and such like in it, but just to make sure that we're on that there, it's really important to our revenue. Any other questions or comments? No? Okay. Happy to move on. Item 5.8, Children's Services.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
Just to give a progress update in relation to the Champions Group met last month. It was a well-attended event, and they showcased the film in the recent leadership event that was held up in Skye, which had both young people and many different adults from different agencies. So it was a really successful evening, and the young people done really, really well in presenting that. In relation to disability, we've now engaged Vocal, and next week a questionnaire will be going out to all young people who have got additional support needs coming from schools, in particular Salters Gate, in relation to what type of model do they want going forward. Previously, obviously, we've ran Capability Scotland ran a summer school there. They withdrew from this activity, and unfortunately we were able to find another supplier to undertake this task. So we're engaging with parents to find out, is there a different model that they would like to consider going forward, and can they be part of that as well? So as I say, that goes out next week. It's just been signed off last night, so that's good. Child protection data, as you can see from the report, it remains fairly static. It was at 3.2% across Scotland, which is just above the national average. Our looked after children at home has increased quite significantly over the last year, and in quarter two we've seen a 76% increase. I would add that I think this is quite a positive trend going forward, as in its early identification. We're identifying very early on where there's issues within a family, and we would always consider supporting families at home before we would ever consider removal. And one of the ways that we can do that, if we don't get voluntary engagement, is obviously to go through the children's hearing system. So that's where the surge in that group has come from. Hawthorne Children's Centre continue to work in partnership with SureStart in relation to a new venture up in Pennycook, where we see kids with additional support needs who would normally come down to Hawthorne Children's Centre on a bus are actually going into the SureStart premises up in Pennycook, and staff from Hawthorne are going up there in relation to supporting them. So we'll get feedback in the early new year in relation to rolling that programme out even further across the county. Residential care we've already touched on. It's been a very challenging summer, but we are progressing things as we move forward. Family placement team continue to try and recruit local carers, which is a challenge going forward, but it's a national challenge. It's no bespoke to Midlothian. We are part of the PACE programme, which is the Permanence and Care Excellence programme, and as from the 1st of November 2017, all children under the age of 12, we are now looking at having a permanent plan in place at 7.5 months, which is really, really ambitious. Bearing in mind that a permanent plan can also be about returning home, it's not about necessarily remaining in care, but it's very ambitious. The Scottish Government and the whole of Scotland are looking at us at the moment in relation to this piece of work, so we'll be able to give updates as this progresses. And finally, just on another positive note, is outcome-focused assessment that we've introduced, which certain members of staff presented at the Pride and Practice national event through in Glasgow in September, and as a result of that we've had many other local authorities across Scotland contacting us to find out how they can develop a plan similar to ours, so that's positive. Challenges. The budget remains an ongoing challenge in relation to, you know, secure care in particular, which we have to manage. Maternity cover, we still have unprecedented levels of maternity cover within children's services. And the child abuse inquiry, we've now at this time had three Section 21 requests. All three have been submitted in time to Lady Smith. And now going forward, we've obviously got the limitation childhood Abuse Scotland Act, which has came into force, which means that anybody who reports that they've been abused over a 3-year period, that time bar is now lifted. So another huge piece of work in relation to getting a framework so that we can manage any potential claims that may come into the service. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? No. Okay. Thanks, Joan. Moving on to item 5.9, Communities and Economy.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the report, the progress is set out on the front page, and happy to pick up on anything that members want to ask about. The one I'd pick on is the adoption of the local development plan, which is a significant event. It does set the land use strategy for the council for the next 10 to 12 years. It gives the council the greatest level of control over planning. And that's important in terms of not just promoting development, which you want to see happen, but also stopping that you don't want to see happen. And it means that planning for infrastructure can be a much more controlled and effective function. It's put you at the forefront for promoting economic development, for meeting housing need, particularly in the affordable sector, and protecting the environment through sustainable growth. So it's a major milestone to have an up-to-date local development plan. In terms of the challenges, linking to that, it's infrastructure to accommodate that rapid and sustained housing growth, of which the key elements are education, are roads and transport. They're the two big ones. Utility services tend to be accommodated, but not always. But it's those two main issues of education and transport, together with the issue of the impact on health services. progress on City Deal is going to be a major piece of work, and where we're at the present time is, of course, City Deal heads of terms were agreed back in July. There's now a tremendous amount of work to do to really put the flesh on the bones of that in terms of the actual business cases which fought for individual projects, and also the things like the financial plan and the implementation plan. And there's a project management office being established in Edinburgh, and there was a previous report to members about a month ago in relation to that. So that will take up a fair bit of resource over the next few months and perhaps over the next year. A couple of things which are major challenges: the impact of the rollout of universal credit, and that's been touched on by others, and the impact of the Community Empowerment Act in terms of services with communities and community asset transfer. Finally, just a word on town centres, which is a major area for activity. Still working on Gore Bridge, and with a major project coming on stream in terms of public realm improvements to add to the work already been done at Gore Bridge and the station building, etc. And at Penicuik, we're expecting to complete the phase one work to satisfy Historic Environment Scotland and the Heritage Lottery Fund to release the main part of the funding for a five-year programme of comprehensive improvement at Penicuik, similar to that which has been undertaken at Dalkeith and Gore Bridge. Chair, that was just a quick run through. More than happy to pick up on any detail or any of those aspects in the report.
Thanks, Ian. Any questions or comments? Yes, Councillor Schmill.
Yes, just a question as to when we'll have a believable timetable for commencement of work on the Sheriff Hall roundabout.
The latest information I gleaned from the Transport Scotland website is that draft orders would be issued in 2019. They have chosen a scheme as a result of public consultation about 18 months ago, so they would then work up to what they call draft orders, which are obviously subject to potential objection. I know there has been concern from the cycling lobby, which has been quite strong, and I understand Transport Scotland have listened to what the cycling lobby have been saying, so we may well see in the draft orders something which seeks to accommodate the concerns of the cycle lobby. The timetable then is a little bit dependent on the level of objection which might come forward or not to draft orders and how long it takes to deal with those. But there then would be going into the formal or the more detailed design work, which does take time, and then construction. So beyond the 2019 draft orders timetable, I haven't seen anything on the Transport Scotland website to suggest anything further beyond that, but I can chase that with them. I'm actually meeting them, if not this week, then next week, and I can raise that with them.
Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. Managing the uncertainties of Brexit, Ian, do you have a firm plan for that, or do you think it's just going to unfold as much as the government's allowing it to at the moment?
I suppose there's two aspects. One is the funding element, because the funding programmes, like the LEADER Rural Funding Programme and what they call ERDF, Regional Development Funds, we expect those to time out. There won't be an abrupt stop there. We understand that those programmes will be allowed to complete. So, for example, the LEADER programme completes in 2019 or 2020. So we're expecting that not to have an abrupt fall-off from that. But it does mean that the funding programmes from the EU will stop. On the business end of things, as you know very well, the majority of the businesses we deal with in this part of the world are fairly small ones, and we deal with them through our business gateway. And really, the most useful thing we can do is through our business gateway advice to try and reassure and assist and guide the small firms in relation to that. The bigger firms tend to probably are fewer in number, tend to have a fair understanding of how they want to take their businesses forward. But the smaller ones are the ones we really focus on in any event to try and reassure them.
Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow up on that, I read over the weekend that there's a potential risk that within the next 2 weeks we have a deadline coming up within the negotiations, which could, if they don't pan out, lead to a no deal. And I just wonder what we have in place right now that, should that happen, we're going to be okay going forward into the new year on the basis of a no deal.
to some extent, locally, it's probably limited what we can achieve. What I'd be expecting is if, in fact, at national level, that was happening, we'd be expecting UK and Scottish governments probably to come forward with the way in which they would wish the national economy to be handled and what provisions they would put in place at national level, what levers they could use in terms of the sort of what's available to them at a national policy level, and we would then pick up from that at the regional and local level. So we would be working with the likes of Scottish Enterprise, Scottish Development International, in terms of the Scottish position, along with Scottish Government, to try and see that so whatever measures are coming forward to try and ameliorate or handle issues coming from the potential option of a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah, so to just understand that then, so effectively we're in the position now where should things kind of fall apart, especially over the kind of Irish border, that seems to be what's the big sticking point now, that we would be dependent on national governments having a relief effort, and if that didn't come forward, we'd effectively kind of be stuck.
I suppose just two things to mention. I mean, my understanding, and I'm not an expert on this, my understanding is if there's a no deal on Brexit, then it's World Trade Organization rules that come into play. And really, that's something which is very much negotiated at national level. What I would say, though, is if you look at the economy, the local economy, and you say, well, how much of that is actually export trade? Probably minority of that most of the trade is internal within the UK. That's not to say that we shouldn't be alive to the issues of companies who are looking to improve their export position, but you know, I wouldn't probably want to speculate beyond that, but we would probably need to be wary. And if we were heading down a route which was a no-deal Brexit, then I would expect there'd be a fair amount of activity at national level with the national organisations, and we would need to feed through into that.
Thanks. I'm impressed we managed to get 41 minutes in without talking about Brexit. So, well done us. Any other questions or comments? Oh, sorry, Marco.
Just a question with regards to page 131, which is about the Community Choices funding that you referred to. I just wondered how it was put into practice. You were saying it was part of the initiative is aimed at reducing the disadvantaged poorer families experiencing meeting the cost of the school day in 11 primary schools in the target area. I just wondered how that's going to work in practice. And the other question is regarding the development and implementation of the new participatory budgeting, which I'm not happy about because the HRA money worked fine for us. But I appreciate that you have to follow your orders. And I just wondered if I see in the due date is the 31st of March next year. Is there any way that can be brought home sooner? Because I think some of the elected members that I speak to know that there's various things in their area that they would love to get started, and obviously using whatever budgeting system there is.
Well, on the first one, which is the bottom of page 131, the reference to the community choices, I would, in terms of the detail, I'll need to come back to you on that. So I just, to be perfectly frank, I'll need to get the detail on that. In terms of the participatory budgeting, which I think is the other one you asked about, then that follows on, as I understand it, from the decision of council, which was that the funds which the members have would still stay with the members, but that the way in which they would be dispersed would be through a participatory funding process. That's my understanding of how it... So in terms of ensuring that funding is therefore dispersed using participatory budgeting principles on the basis of those which have been established, just is your question one of saying, well, do you want to see money carry over into the next financial year? Is that, I'm not quite sure what the question is, that the, what you're asking? Traditionally, my understanding is that what they call the environment funds, which are allocated to interim, could be carried over. I'm not aware of what the financial rules are on this particular one. From my perspective, in terms of the service I run, I would see no difficulty in the projects being funded with money from this year into next year. But I'd caveat that by saying I need the head of finance to confirm that.
Thanks, Ian. Could you come back with a further report on that to us, please? Because some of us just are kind of working in the dark there, and it would be good to be able to go back to our communities and say, yeah, there might be some money there that we can work with you on. And at the moment, we can't basically tell them anything.
Thanks. Happy to move on. Good. Item 5.10, education.
Thank you. I'm committed to the creation of a world-class education system through excellence and equity. The report for this quarter focuses on outcomes for quarter two. The theme for 2017-18, which we outlined in quarter one, is Mind the Gap, taking a closer look at progression. As stated also in the quarter one report, we have three main strategic headings that we're working under for this year. Firstly, raising attainment and achievement. Secondly, learning provision. And the final one is leadership. More detail regarding these I've put in pages one and two of the quarter two report itself. In terms of raising attainment and achievement, through the broad general education, that's primary one through to the end of secondary three, during this quarter we completed the final moderation exercise prior to the submission of the final curriculum for excellence data to the Scottish Government. So last year, for the very first time, that data school by school was actually published by the Scottish Government, and this is due this year to be published in December. So I'll report on that formally in quarter three, although I have given some indicative levels within the quarter two report, but we need to wait for that to be confirmed and standardised. In order to improve attainment, though, we've implemented rigorous attainment meetings in the primary sector, mirroring the good work that we undertook within the secondary sector, which relies on the collation of very robust evidence. With the introduction of a new tracking module in our management system, which is called CMIS, and also the pilot work surrounding the new assessment and reporting guidance from Education Scotland, which also changed last year, we've actually implemented three tracking and monitoring periods for all primaries to ensure that we identify any child at risk of not achieving their expected level, to ensure that we can then intervene and work out what package of support are around each of those individual learners. And certainly from the attainment that we've managed to improve considerably, it's by knowing the individual learners in detail that's really making the difference there. In terms of the senior phase attainment, the local measures were published in Insight in September, and a seminar is being held on the 5th of December for all elected members, and the full attainment and achievement report will be presented to Council in December. Some of the key achievements include literacy and numeracy at level 5. We were really pleased that we have achieved our highest ever level for the national benchmarking results for literacy and numeracy at level 5, showing a 7% improvement on the previous year, and actually a 17.6% improvement when you look at 2011-17. In terms of one or more hires, so that's a really important indicator for us, by the end of S5, that's our highest ever recorded level to date, showing a 4.1% improvement on the previous year, and a 7% improvement just from 2014-17, and we're now showing a positive four-year trend of 2.3%. In terms of three or more hires, so again, this is another really important measure for us, by the end of S5. Again, that's our highest recorded level to date, showing a 4.3% improvement on the previous year and a staggering 9.5% improvement from 2014-17, and that results in a four-year trend of 3.2%. With this being said, and we're really pleased with those early indications, there's still considerable work to be done on the breadth and depth measures. So although we're making some considerable progress, five or more hires we'd like to tap into, real progress for S4, but is that improvement by the end of S6? So if we can have more young people staying on until the end of S6, we can really improve attainment overall. In terms of learning provision, this session we are taking a closer look at our learning pathways, including transitions, in order to ensure that the curriculum acts as a hook for all of our learners and not just the majority. So that's catering for the less able and our most able learners, so that we can build challenge into the curriculum itself. With reference to attendance and exclusion, this has been a key priority for us. So quarter two shows an improvement of 0.59% improvement in primary attendance. We were less concerned about primary attendance. It's pretty good in Midlothian. And there's been a 1.23% improvement in secondary attendance. We still need to do much, much more there across our six secondaries. I'm pleased to say there was a drop of 4 exclusions in the primary sector and a staggering drop of 56 exclusions in the secondary sector when compared with quarter one, so we're making some progress there. In terms of leadership and management, this is also key. In August, we implemented year two of the leadership programme in order to build a collaborative leadership culture at all levels, so not just at the head teacher level. And this will be achieved by growing what we used to call associated schools groups into full learning communities, so embracing the good work of the New Battle Learning Community and spreading that, but also building professional networks. And we've also implemented a professional personal leadership reflection tool for all of our senior leaders, undertaking 360 evaluations, and they've got a leadership plan in place with lots of support for not just head teachers but deputies and principal teachers, because we really need to grow our own head teachers of the future. Challenges and risks I've included in that section. I also reported those to Cabinet, so I suppose our big challenge and risk at present is the pace of legislative change, including the Education Governance Bill that's currently out for consultation, and I'll provide a report on the outcome of that Midlothian consultation to Cabinet in January, but happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Grace. Any questions? Diane?
I would just like to ask what it was that caused the reduction in exclusions for children.
We've put in place a number of things. So we were first concerned, and not very many of our primary schools do exclude, but some of our primary schools exclude quite a lot. So the good work that started at the Lawfield community, for which they just won a major award, was ensuring that we have taken a real partnership approach to that. And that work has now been spread across the whole of the New Battle Learning community. So it's looking at things like readiness for learning. So some children come into school at the beginning of the day quite unsettled. It's making sure that we have that nurture approach right from the very beginning, making sure that we're linking with other agencies to know if there are any background factors that we need to take account of. We've done a lot of work also with teachers, ensuring that the curriculum actually matches the needs of learners. And partly what we're doing around the tracking periods is that we're working out those children that perhaps misbehave in lessons because they're really not keeping up with the learning, that we're actually tailoring the learning to help them. So quite a bespoke set of interventions in place in Lawfield, in Mayfield, and in St Luke's in particular. We did a lot of work also within the creation of a nurture base and nurture approaches within Newton Grange, but the vast majority of our other primary schools don't actually exclude. In the secondary sector, we didn't have specific nurture bases in the secondary sector. We've now implemented one in New Battle High School. That's making a really significant difference there, and we're trying to implement one within the Dalkeith campus, and it's likely to be that provision will allow vulnerable learners to access that within St David's and within Dalkeith.
Thanks, Grace. Colin?
Thank you, Chair. How's the situation with recruiting new teachers? Is it looking up? Is it?
We did a lot of work over the last 2 years recruiting teachers in Midlothian. I don't know if you remember, we showed, I think, to Council, was it in June, the video for the new recruitment drive. So we were actually really pleased that we managed to appoint all of our head teachers. In terms of our teachers, we also managed to appoint a permanent supply pool. The difficulty we have at present is the same trend that you're seeing nationally, which is specifically about maths teachers and some science subjects. There's always been a problem with home economics teachers. So schools have done quite a lot of different things in terms of reshaping the curriculum to cope with that. In terms of the maths teacher shortage, that's something that we're looking at not just as a region but nationally. So as part of the work we're doing for the New Battle Digital Centre of Excellence, there are digital solutions to that that we're actually linking up with Highland Region, and Edinburgh University are able to provide a system that's called Connected Classrooms, so we can link up with other classrooms that do have maths specialists They would still have a general teacher within the room to assist children, but for that specialist intervention, particularly at higher and advanced higher, we would be putting on those workshops where children are tapping into that virtually. I have to say, though, I've been quite pleased in terms of the recruitment within Midlothian. We do hear some stories from other local authorities, some of our more rural local authorities, that are finding that a challenge. I think one of the big risks for us moving forward, particularly with the new education bill, is are we going to be creating people that want to be head teachers in the future? So I think we need to safeguard and actually grow our own, because it's going to be quite a different skill set that's actually required in the future, and not just the leaders of learning, but having that business manager head on actually as well.
Thanks, Grace. Councillor Smale.
Thank you again. You comment that the financial position of the education service is off target, I think to the tune of about 650,000, and actions are in place to address the overspend. I wonder if you could give us a little more detail on what actions those are.
So part of that, there was the report that spoke about the DSM scheme. So a part of that is related to recharging of supply. So we've changed how we actually do that, including the supply rate. So there was quite a complicated mechanism which was actually in place before, which made the DSM allocation, and then there was also a central allocation in place which actually made it quite difficult to work out. So we're actually going to have a standard charge for that moving forward, so you'll find that that budget itself actually evens out. The other aspect was concerned to the good time to be two, so that was allocated as fully funded, but within the growth in Midlothian we see that actually we have more children within the early years, so that growth actually did have an impact. We're re-looking at that moving forward, looking at not just the good time to be two, but also the 3 and 4 year olds, so taking a much more holistic look of the early years provision. And through the Learning Estate strategy, we also built in the demographic growth, so we've got a clearer understanding of the budget requirements moving forward. I think the other part was related to miscellaneous, so we're actually going to be taking a much closer look at the DSM scheme itself in terms of what is actually allocated out and what's kept centrally. The one issue we have with that, though, is as part of the education bill, the government also undertook a consultation on fair funding. So we're awaiting the final detail around that, because it's actually quite general what's contained within the bill. So we don't want to take too much of a look at that, just in case that's not actually within our gift. One of our other risks moving forward is also the allocation of those responsibilities directly to head teachers. So we do have some concern around that. What I would say is that whole budget aspect also doesn't include the additional PEF money. So we do have the additional £2.2 million to be building into that. And that's funds that can also be carried forward. And we're just waiting for other government announcements on how that will actually be allocated moving forward, particularly in the year 18-19, where we're looking for quite a bit more detail about that.
Good. Happy to move on. Commercial operations.
Thanks, Chair. As with my colleagues, I'll go through the successes and challenges, and then happy to pause for questions at that point. Just kind of picking up, as I've outlined at the start of this report, the whole kind of emphasis in relation to commercial operations going forward is having a structure that's fit for purpose. And that's geared towards co-location at the one site at Hopefield. We're looking at staff from the kind of top to the bottom. A recurring theme in the past has been around generic working, and what we've done this year is we've taken on 5 apprentices, and they're going through a generic training programme that covers waste, roads and our land team, which is fairly unique. What's also been put in place is a college-based training, which at the end of that, each of these operatives will get a certificate which they'll be able to use kind of going forward. We're also looking at the supervision level to ensure that they can then operate at that generic level as well. Just moving down in terms of waste services, I've noted there the progress that's being made with the residual waste plant at Miller Hill. And on the face of it, that might not seem particularly unique, but those within the waste sector will know that traditionally it's very difficult to deliver such projects. So ourselves and City of Edinburgh, in terms of getting it to this point, is quite remarkable. But what I was really impressed with, I had a recent site visit, and it's actually the site itself. From an engineering perspective, I was really impressed. It's probably the best-run site I've ever seen in my whole career. And as a byproduct, what that's allowing is this project to be coming in ahead of schedule at the moment, which, again, as I say, is unique. So the idea is that probably towards the end of 2018 now, we'll take commissioning waste. So there's a nine-month period where the plant gets up to full running speed, but we'll start to deliver our waste at that point in time. Kind of moving down, as much as what we've been looking at over the last months, if no longer, is about reducing costs within the services, but one of the things that we've done within our lands and countryside team in particular is about transforming that team to deliver on increasing our income streams. And it was targeted because we felt that that was, for two reasons. One, it was the one that could probably adapt to that transformation more readily. But secondly, the levels of income that we could achieve and the rate of return was probably greatest. So I've highlighted some of the projects that we've kind of undertaken in the last quarter. But for the financial year 17-18, we're probably looking at an additional income stream of somewhere around £500,000. Moving on to the bottom of the page 165, I've mentioned there the work that we've had done by the Freight Transport Authority. So that was essentially us asking the Freight Transport Authority to look at what's in all, what does our existing operation look in terms of maintaining our vehicle fleet and what areas could we improve in, but also how could we do that service better? Could it be looked at as an outsourced service? Now, we're still waiting on the final report, but indications at this point in time indicate to us that we're actually running a very efficient service, both in terms of the number of vehicles that we actually maintain and how quickly we turn them round, but also about the outturn costs for maintenance. Moving on to page 166, again, just focusing on that income stream, within the health and safety team, we've identified a training programme that was both something that our internal teams were looking for, but we've also managed to identify external organisations that are keen to take on that that need and have us deliver training. So we're kind of looking initially at a five-figure sum with a view to next year generating a six-figure income stream for that. And what we're doing at the moment is we're building in resilience within that small team. Just kind of moving on, and it was touching on some of the work that's been done in relation to the Borders Rail. We've got a report that's due to go to the Blueprint Group, and that's looking for funding to take forward a feasibility study, and that's about creating links for walking and cycling, not just adjacent to our own stations in Midlothian, but linking up with the Borders and City of Edinburgh Council to give us that comprehensive network. And it was something that will consider a point that was made earlier on by Sheriff Hall. It needs to look at how we access through and past Sheriff Hall as well, and it is linking in with the improvements at the junction. And the final point in terms of where we are in relation to successes, we've got a final application for decriminalised parking. It's now sitting with Scottish Government. Unfortunately, there's been a slight delay in terms of additional consultation that Scottish Government have introduced. But at this moment in time, subject to approval and subject to Council taking it forward, we would look to introduce decriminalised parking in April of next year. Just touching on some of the emerging challenges, I'm not going to go into the issues that the budget is going to introduce, but one of the things we're doing in waste services, given the demographic growth in Midlothian, we're currently looking at all our routing for all our vehicles, for all our waste streams, and that's a piece of work that's ongoing at the moment. We're also looking at a second part, and that's in terms of contamination. It's about identifying where that's occurring, why it's occurring, and what steps we can take to reduce that so far as possible. Generally, across Scotland, we've got one of the lowest contamination levels, but we still want to drive that down because there's a direct correlation between contamination levels and what we pay to dispose of that waste stream. Within travel services, just touching on, there's still quite a bit of work that we're doing in terms of, we know what travel and what costs are involved in our staff carrying out their various duties, but there's a significant bit of work that's ongoing just now to see how we can reduce that, how we can be more effective in terms of travel. So I'll pause at that point, Chair, and happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Ricky. Any questions? Marco.
Thanks, Chair. Obviously disappointed that we're not having the decriminalisation for parking a lot sooner than that time, because we seem to have been talking about this for goodness knows how long, and I keep reassuring people out there that complain to me about parking. I'm sure all of the other elected members have the same issues in their own areas. But if that's, you think April next year is a realistic date? I think the other question I have is, you have regarding here the travel services, and part of the travel plans, a new contract for the 39 service has been awarded to Borders Buses. I thought that was a 339 that was a Borders Buses, and there wasn't any change really to 39 at all, except maybe I'd be tweeting on the actual times itself, because in the last few days I've had people coming up to me and saying, what's happening with the 39 service? And I thought, well, nothing that I know of. So I don't know, have you got to tell me something that I didn't know before?
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Russell. In terms of decriminalised parking, I'm actually taking a report forward to Council on the 19th of December to give you members an update. We've done everything we can at this stage to bring forward decriminalised parking. As I say, it is with Scottish Government. They've given us assurances that unless there's something comes out of the woodwork that they're not aware of, that we should be able to introduce it from April next year. We've got the existing one traffic warden continuing to operate until that point in time. What we're also doing at the moment is we are in discussion with the contractor who would be carrying out the duties on the street. So just kind of tying up what that means in terms of detail. The report that will be coming to members also talks about a protocol in terms of how we will enforce that. We've also got a document that will follow that, and that will be about things like how long do people get before a ticket's issued and that kind of thing. So everything that we are aware of at this moment in time, April is the realistic target. The second thing, yeah, there is a bit of confusion between the 39 and the 339. So the 339 is the service that operates from Tesco, goes to Bonnerig, up to Gorbridge and back. So it is rebranded the 339. In terms of the 39, that operates from Tesco towards Woodburn, your constituency, we're not aware of any changes, so there's nothing in the pipeline. And I had a discussion at the Lothian Buses board meeting last week, and they talked about any changes that will come to the network, and there was no detail, but the next change would be February next year. So we wait with bated breath to see what potential changes will come, although they did say they didn't expect anything to be of significance.
That just seems bonkers that you've got a 39 and a 339. I can see many people getting on the wrong bus. Is there anybody that... Who decided that?
It's a number that you register with the Traffic Commissioner. I can understand where there might be confusion. It's certainly not something we've had fed back to us. Obviously, they're two separate bus companies, and the logo and the detail on them is totally separate. The one for the 339, for example, talks about taking you to the community hospital, the mining museum, for example. So it does have that differentiation. In terms of why exactly a 339, I couldn't actually tell you that at this moment in time, but I'll find out for you.
Thanks, I would really appreciate that. It's just that, particularly with the bus frequenting the community hospital, I'm just thinking about people who might have visual difficulties and such like. Anyway, thanks, Marco. Councillor Beard.
Thank you. Yeah, there was 2 points. First, just on the 39, I was just looking at the budget proposals there, and it does say on page 78, the intention is to withdraw support for current supported bus services in Midlothian, routes 39, 101, 102, 50. 51, 52, and 111. So there is a. Surely there would be an impact on the 39. the other thing I've absolutely forgotten about, and apologise profusely. Yeah, could you answer on the 39? If we're cutting the support for it, then will there be an impact?
Yeah, sorry. Obviously, that's part of the budget deliberations that Council will consider in due course. And if support is withdrawn from the 339, then that service would, in all likelihood, cease. In terms of the 39 is a fully commercial service, so it wouldn't be affected. It would be the 339, but it was the 39 when the budget papers were drafted. So it's just for clarification, the 339 is the supported part, the 39 is not supported, and it's fully commercial.
Thank you for that. I think we'll need to come back to that one. The other one was about the decriminalisation. I know we've already repainted the double yellows. Do you have how much we've spent so far on repainting and bringing it up to code?
In terms of modifying signage and repainting, there was, I think I recall it was £100,000 was put in the budget to allow for that. What the up-to-date final cost is, I'm not sure, but I can come back to you on that.
Thanks. So that's roughly about £100,000 so far, but hasn't been checked yet. Because, again, in the budget proposals, the expected income is only £50,000. So if we spent twice as much on painting as we're expected to get back in parking fines, is that right?
Yeah, but what you have to remember is that we would have to do those markings in any case. The problem is that if the markings are not clear, if the signage is not clear, and if the two don't speak to each other, then we can't enforce them. So we would have to do that in any case, whether decriminalised parking was coming in or not.
Thanks. Councillor Alexander.
With regard to the apprentices, I just wondered if it could be linked up with the school, because I've heard that if pupils at the school can connect up with businesses, sometimes they carry on their school education longer because they see the necessity of extra qualifications. And I just wondered if you're actually doing that with the schools.
Over the last 2 years, we've done quite a bit of groundbreaking work with schools. What we found previously is that kids were coming along either to interviews or to some of the sessions that we had, and they didn't have an awful lot of knowledge in their preparation for interviews, perhaps left a lot to be desired. So we've now gone into schools and we're taking them right through the various stages, and that's how you kind of sit for an interview, the kind of things that are available, and then it's allowing kids to have a more balanced approach in terms of some of the decisions that they make. Now, that's something that's carried on. We also provide a number of training opportunities. Particularly, we've done that in our land services. So we're taking kids from school, giving them an insight into what's available. We're allowing them to look at our other services and then trying to engender that kind of this is something I want to do, and preparing them for that. So we do work very closely at that level at the school time.
Thanks. So did you want to come back in there, Diane? Can you put your mic on?
Yes, a different question. Just about the decriminalisation of parking. I can see the point of it, but I just wonder if it will move the issue further into the residential parts of the community and cause more problems there.
So just to be clear, what decriminalised parking does is it doesn't increase the scope of enforcement. So any restrictions are currently there. What you and your colleagues will see, and you know, we'll see it just outside this office in Buccleuch Street, people park on a single or a double yellow line where that should be enforced. Currently, I would say that doesn't happen to the same degree. So the likelihood is, and I'll probably use the example of City of Edinburgh, where you have robust enforcement, absolutely, people will then be potentially forced out into areas where there is no likelihood of enforcement, where they can't get a space in one of the car parks, and that's something that we're mindful of, and we just have to monitor it to see where indeed that may take place. But it's always that potential where people can't get a parking space, then it will migrate to residential areas, but we'll have to keep it under kind of observation and see what it is and then react to it.
Councillor Smeal.
Yes, Ricky, you were very specific about the 39 being a fully commercial service. I wonder if you would comment on the 51 and 52, which affect Bath Head.
Again, what I can't say at this point in time, Councillor, is what the impact of reducing the subsidy would be. Clearly, that has a subsidy at the moment. It would be for the operator to make a decision if we withdrew that subsidy, what in actual fact that would mean. But we haven't got into that level of discussion until such times as a decision by Council is made.
Some of these services are also subsidised by Borders Council. Are you in discussion with Borders as to what their intentions are?
Yeah, we are. There's a couple of the services that do come through Midlothian, and they've got cross-boundary subsidies. So absolutely we are in discussion to see what Borders proposals are. The strange thing is that in some regards, and we've seen it with a number of my services, where it's almost like one authority waits on somebody else kind of making the move and then they follow on. So it is about trying to get that dialogue with Borders to see what would be the impact, what's their thoughts, and that's what we're doing at the moment. And there's also the other service that's in East Lothian, so similarly there's that discussion taking place there.
Thanks. Okay, happy to move on. Finance, you picking up as well? Oh, no, sorry.
I'm Jackie Dougal, Business Services Manager. I provide apologies for Gary Fairley this morning. Quarter two has seen achievements across all areas of finance and ISS, and I'd just like to touch on a few of those today. With regards to the financial strategy, the completion of the 16-17 audited financial statements with an unqualified audit certificate. Our HR business partners have been working closely with heads of service across the organisation to develop workforce plans, which will form an overall view of the workforce actions for the coming 5 years. And that finalised workforce strategy is expected to be presented to Council in December. Our procurement service has a new 2-year contract delivery plan, which was recently approved by Cabinet in October. Our digital services colleagues have progressed work on the Scottish-wide area network, the SWAN project. Phase one is now completed, and work is continuing on phase two for improvements to that network. Also, the Wi-Fi programme, the design has been completed, and the core infrastructure for Wi-Fi has been installed and configured. The project will now move into implementation and deployment with the associated cabling of the sites involved. As set out on page 180 of today's agenda, there are a number of key challenges for the team. These are constant and consistent and will appear in our future performance report so that the committee can monitor the progress of these. The key challenges include continuing to work on developing future year's budget projections, in particular for 18-19, a base budget that includes the impact of the change programme. Regulatory changes proposed that will impact on council activities if not planned for, such as new data protection legislation, GDPR, and also payment card industry data security changes. One of the biggest challenges that we have is continuing to reshape our services to deliver further savings. We're looking to improve business processes, in particular examining opportunities for the introduction of technologies to replace manual processes across all our functions. I'll pause there and I'm happy to take any questions and also to obtain responses offline for those questions that I can't answer.
Colleagues, questions or comments? Happy to move on in that case. Item 5.13, property and facilities management. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. In Gary's absence, I'll take this forward. And just a small update, Gary's recovering well after his operation, so he's getting a speedier recovery as come along. Just kind of touching on a couple of things, just pointing out the number of successful handovers that have taken place recently in terms of Paradise and Bilston primary schools. And it's also worth noting the new funding streams that are that have been secured. In terms of property assets, the public engagement in respect to the Stop Our Lady Victoria Master Plan is now complete. And also, just to point out, the acquisition of the office premises at White Hart Street in relation to the bigger Dalkeith Town Centre regeneration project. Turning over, obviously there's noted there a number of successes in relation to sport and leisure in terms of events across Midlothian. In terms of the emerging challenges, we'll all be aware that Midlothian is a growing community and there's building works ongoing everywhere. That unfortunately has a downside in that the market costs in terms of labour and materials is increasing, and that does put pressure on the major works programme. And just kind of one other point to note is that we're concluding the business case for Destination Hill End, and a report will be coming to Council very shortly in relation to that for consideration. Happy to pause at that point, Chair, address any questions, but if not, then I'll feed back at a later stage.
Thanks, Margot.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, my main question is the bottom of 191, which is the acquisition of the office premises and how that managed to provide a source of income, and what is the potential benefit to the Dalkeith Town Centre if the regeneration project proceeds, and have we got a date for the actual seminar to allow the new members to know and understand what the regeneration programme was and is?
Thanks. I'll come back with answers to those questions for you.
Thanks. Could you come back to me as well? I think we've had a few questions about when those specific papers will have come back before in this committee, and it would be good to get some detail. Any other? Yeah, Colin.
Thank you, Chair. The 9/11 White Hart Street, I think that's the one Margaret was talking about. We've acquired this already, have we? Is this a done deal?
That's my understanding, but I'll confirm that to you.
Good. Thanks. Moving on, item 5.14, the Council's performance report for quarter two.
Thank you, Chair. This is the quarter two Midlothian Council report set out under the five themes of the Single Midlothian Plan, the successes and the challenges. And of course, we've We've covered a lot of this already, Chair, in the course of the meeting, so I don't intend to go into the detail of that. I suppose at the current time as a council, there is an inevitable focus on the financial challenge for 2018-19 and beyond. I think, I suppose, drawing some conclusions from all the reports that have been in front of you this morning, I think it's really important also to recognise the scale and the range of the very positive and in some cases quite transformational work that is going on within the council. And this is resulting in both significant performance improvements. You can see that in education and children's services and elsewhere. But also that transformational work is driving the savings agenda, be it, you know, income generation or other approaches we're taking to bridge the 18-19 gap. And I think in all of this, with the focus on the budget challenge, it's also really important to recognise the potential and the opportunities of the growth agenda that there is in Midlothian. A growing economy, the new businesses, the employment opportunities, how that ties into the very dynamic work taking place in our schools and with our young people in terms of positive destinations. And whilst that growth also produces real challenges in terms of creating the new infrastructure, and particularly social infrastructure, required, and that was a focus of the recent Community Planning Day, which took place at New Battle Abbey College. I do think in that this period of, you know, financial constraint, the fact that in a very real way Midlothian has the opportunity to grow itself out of some of these challenges is something that is important to bear in mind. So I think a lot of positives you've heard about this morning, Chair, a very real focus in the immediate forthcoming period in the 18-19 budget and future years, and happy to take any questions on the report.
Any questions for Kenneth? Yes, Colin.
Not a question, just to reiterate what Kenneth was saying. I think it's a great opportunity. I think Midlothian is up and coming place, and that's the reason why we've got so many people coming to live in Midlothian and want to live in Midlothian, and I'm 100% behind him in what he says. Thank you, Kenneth.
Good. Nice, positive. Last item on the agenda is 5.15, which is a balanced scorecard.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is intended to provide an overview and useful summary of performance across the organisation as it relates to a number of key issues. The first part of the report focuses on the key indicators relating to our three main priorities in the Single Midlothian Plan. So that's about reducing the gap in economic circumstances, reducing the gap in health outcomes, and reducing the gap in learning outcomes. All of that is very much work in progress. I think the positive work we're doing in terms of health and social care integration is very much helping in terms of health outcomes. And you've heard from Grace in relation to some of the very positive work on learning outcomes. The second part of the report sets out groupings of measures under a customer's perspective, which relates to the five themes of the Single Midlothian Plan, the Council's financial health, learning and growth measures, and internal processes. As ever, the balanced scorecard is a relatively new piece of work. It is a piece of work still in progress, but as well as taking any questions that members may have, happy to get feedback on the value of this as it stands, or indeed any amendments that members might wish to see in this reporting arrangement.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I used to find the format of the balanced scorecard really difficult to understand, and this is much clearer on the eye. Any other questions, comments, suggestions for Kenneth? No? In that case, thank you very much for your attendance this morning, and I think this is our last PRS of the year. See you next year.